Pura Praganya Gana Gocha Guloru Haram Goranga Guru Tamago Pyarakopa Briksham Gopala Gada Rati Damyati Singha Gora Govinda Deshi Kavaram Satatam Namami Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Grantharaj, Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 6, which is entitled Jnan Yoga, text number 10. Yogi Yunjita Satatam. Yogi Yunjita Satatam. Atmanam Rahasi Stitaha. Atmanam Rahasi Stitaha. Ekaki Jatta Chitatma. Ekaki Jatta Chitatma. Nirashir Api Raghraha. Nirasir aparigraha. A transcendentalist. Yunjita. Must concentrate in Krishna consciousness. Satatam. Constantly. Atmanam. Himself. By body, mind, and self. Rahasi, in a secluded place. Stita, being situated. Ekaki, alone. Yata chitatma, always careful in mind. Nirasi, without being attracted by anything else. Aparigraha, free from the feeling of possessiveness. Translation: a transcendentalist should always engage his body, mind, and self in a relationship with the Supreme. He should live alone in a secluded place and should always carefully control his mind. He should be free from desires and feelings of possessiveness. Please repeat. A transcendentalist should always engage his body, mind, and self in a relationship with the Supreme. He should live alone in a secluded place and should always carefully control his mind. He should be free from desires and feelings of possessiveness. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Krishna is realized in different degrees as Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna consciousness means, concisely, to be always engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. It's a very beautiful statement. It's very important. It's a very nice thing to remember. Prabhupada's saying here that what Krishna consciousness concisely means. Anyone who's a follower of Srila Prabhupada should understand this. Huh? He says, I'll read it again. Krishna consciousness means, concisely, to be always engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. But those who are attached to the impersonal Brahman or the localized super soul, are also partially Krishna conscious, because the impersonal Brahman is a spiritual ray of Krishna, and the super soul is the all-pervading partial expansion of Krishna. Thus, the impersonalist and the meditator are also indirectly Krishna conscious. A directly Krishna conscious person is the topmost transcendentalist, because such a devotee knows what is meant by Brahman and Paramatma. His knowledge of the absolute truth is perfect, whereas the impersonalist and the meditative yogi are imperfectly Krishna conscious. Nevertheless, all of these are instructed herewith to be constantly engaged in their particular pursuits so that they may come to the highest perfection sooner or later. The first business of a transcendentalist is to keep the mind always on Krishna. One should always think of Krishna and should not forget him even for a moment. Concentration of the mind on the Supreme is called samadhi or trance. In order to concentrate the mind, one should always remain in seclusion and avoid disturbance by external objects. He should be very careful to accept favorable and reject unfavorable conditions that affect his realization. And in perfect determination, he should not hanker after unnecessary material things that entangle him by feelings of possessiveness. All these perfections and precautions are perfectly executed when one is directly in Krishna consciousness, because direct Krishna consciousness means self-abnegation, wherein there is very little chance for material possessiveness. Srila Rupa Goswami characterizes Krishna consciousness in this way: anasaktasya vishayan yataham upayunjataha nirbanda krishna sambande yuktam vairagyam uchate prapanchakatiya buddhya hari sambandha vastana mumukshiri parityago vairagyam phagu kattite. Quote: when one is not attached to anything, but at the same time accepts everything in relation to Krishna, one is rightly situated above possessiveness. On the other hand, one who rejects everything without knowledge of its relationship to Krishna is not as complete in his renunciation. End of quote. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1-2, 255-256. Excuse me. A Krishna conscious person well knows that everything belongs to Krishna, and thus he's always free from feelings of personal possession. As such, he has no hankering for anything on his own personal account. He knows how to accept things in favor of Krishna consciousness and how to reject things unfavorable to Krishna consciousness. He's always aloof from material things because he's always transcendental and he's always alone, having nothing to do with persons not in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, a person in Krishna consciousness is a perfect yogi. Gurave Gura Chandraya Radhikaya Tadalaya Krishnaya Krishna Bhaktaya Tad Bhaktaya Namo Nama. To speak something tonight, I have to beg blessings from senior devotees, some of whom may not know here. Mother Narayani in particular was one of my guru janas, and I have to say, when I see her, I feel so happy because she's done so much wonderful service for Srila Prabhupada. I don't want to embarrass her. She didn't come for that. But please bless me, Mataji. I can do something. Sometimes we ask Prabhupada disciples, please bless me, and they say, I don't have any blessing. And I say, but that's why God created Prabhupada disciples, to give blessings to others, isn't it? Sometimes I disagree with that, but anyway, that's my understanding of things. So, in this verse, Krishna says something which some of you might question. Well, how is that? He says here, Rahasi Stitta Ekaki. This is something I often quote, I like very much. Rahasi Stitta Ekaki. Krishna says that a transcendentalist, whether it's a man or a woman, should live alone. Now, we might have a problem with that. Because Srila Prabhupada didn't tell us to live alone. Srila Prabhupada was very, very emphatic. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was angry with devotees sometimes if they would open a center outside of a town, in a quiet place. Say, no, you should open it up downtown. And Srila Prabhupada, when he began this society, all of our centers, in the first days, the devotees thought, oh, what we're supposed to do is you're supposed to go rent a storefront. That storefronts are temples. Because that's all that they knew in New York, in San Francisco, and in many other places. For quite a while, the devotees just got storefronts. And it was a big thing in Los Angeles when they got an old church. Wow, that was like a really, really special thing for our movement. Prabhupada wanted the devotees to be in the midst of things. So how do we understand the statement of Krishna? And even more disturbing, Krishna doesn't just say this one time in Bhagavad Gita. I've counted at least four times that Krishna says this. He also says the same thing in slightly different words in the 13th chapter in text 11, twice in the same verse. He says, Vivikta desa sevidvam. He speaks about the symptoms of knowledge. Two of those symptoms are, one of them, vivikta deshi sevidvam. To aspire to live in a solitary place. That's a sign of knowledge. And the second one is aratir. Arati means no rati, no attachment. Aratir jana sangsadi. To be detached from the general mass of people. And then in the 18th chapter, text 52, he says, Vivikta Sevi, that you should live in a secluded place. And Srila Prabhupada explains this here in the purport, that twice he says something, and the last sentence, or previous to the last sentence, he says that a devotee is always aloof from material things because he's always transcendental and he's always alone because he has nothing to do with persons who are not in Krishna consciousness. So, I think it's safe to state that if Krishna says something, it's very important. If Krishna says something twice, we should listen. If Krishna says something three, four times, it must be very, very important. This principle to live alone is a principle of knowledge, is a nature of a transcendentalist, if you want to be a transcendentalist, and I think after all that's hopefully why we all joined here, when we want to be transcendentalists, then we have to live alone. But how can we accomplish that in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness? Or maybe you belong to some other Vaishnav Sangha. And sorry, Prabhupada writes in Nectar Devotion, there are many societies of pure Vaishnavas. One is ISKCON. I belong to this society. And it's not so easy sometimes to be able to do that. I would suggest that we need to learn the art of living alone in the crowd. And this is a very kind of abstract concept. It sounds like two opposites. To live alone in a crowd, how can we do that? And especially in a society we're all appropriately encouraged to have strong faith and to be faithful to both Srila Prabhupada's instructions and Srila Prabhupada's mission, and to not go outside. Prabhupada was very unhappy when some of his disciples here in Krishna Balaram Mandir were going outside to hear different katas from different devotees. He said, why are you doing that? If the katha is not good, if the class is not good in ISKCON, then you should give class. This should be our principle. And one reason is, you may say, but I know some very nice sadhu who is speaking. He's very, very elevated, and he's very, very learned. He's very old, and he's speaking on such a nice topic. What's the harm in going? In one sense, there's no harm. But we should understand deeply what it means, the process of hearing. In Ramanujacharya's Gita Bhashya, his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, in the Tadvidi Pranipatena verse, he comments that this verse indicates three aspects of what he calls Shravana Adhikar, or the qualification to hear. Many times we go to class and we bring a pen and we bring a pad of paper and we take notes on everything. Or sometimes we collect the recordings afterwards. That's not bad. It's a nice thing. But we should understand clearly what is our purpose. Our purpose is not information collection. That's another type of gyan. Our purpose is Krishna Bhakti. And that happens, that Krishna Bhakti happens through the mercy of the Srup Shakti, Krishna Kripa Sri Murti, the embodiment of Krishna's mercy. When we hear, especially when we hear Krishna Katha from the right person, but we hear with Shravana Adhikar. Narottam Das Thakur also speaks about indirectly Shravana Adhikar in, I think, Prarthana. He says there that Sunilena Sunakana. Someone is hearing, but they're not hearing. It's going in one ear and coming out the other ear. Once there's a story I heard that there was a king, and someone brought to him a skull, a human skull they'd found. The king took the skull and he called for all of his ministers who were highly paid. And he said, I want to know the person who lived, who had the skull when he was living. Was he a vidvan, a learned person, or was he a murkha? Was he a fool? And if you can't tell me, then I'm going to kill all of you. So it was quite a bit of pressure. And they didn't know what to say. How do you tell a skull if he's a learned person or not? And one of the ministers was very wise. He said, yes, I can tell. Please, someone bring me a piece of straw. So a piece of straw was brought, and he inserted the straw in the one ear of the skull, and it came out the other ear. And he said, he was a murkha. He was a fool. Someone may be hearing, but they're not hearing. So many people hear about Krishna consciousness, but they can't understand. Sometimes even people met Srila Prabhupada, but they couldn't appreciate him, or maybe later they came to appreciate him. Why couldn't they? Because they didn't have Shravana Adhikar, the qualification to hear. And Ramanuja says the qualification is three types: Panipat, Pariprasna, and Seva. We have to submit ourselves, not in a challenging way to the speaker, but we submit. Let me hear what this person is saying. And Pariprasna, we should be honest in our hearing. Hearing is not a passive thing. Hearing is active. Let me be honest and reveal some doubt I might have. And thirdly, seva, service. I have to serve maybe the sadhu who's speaking, if I want to go deep in hearing from him or her. And I have to serve that person, and or I have to serve their message by following that message. And if I don't do those three things, then it may be very entertaining. Oh, it was a very nice class. I liked it. It told lots of stories, and it was lots of fun. A lot of jokes, and it made everybody laugh like anything. But what's the value if we don't have some action from that? So this is required. But to execute this properly, we have to be alone. Because if we're hearing so many things, there's another story I heard that once there was a person who was living in a big city, and his house was right next to a very beautiful stream. But he couldn't hear the sound of the stream. All that he could hear all day long was the sound of the buses and the car horns and the brakes slamming and the motors running and people's playing all kinds of music and things. But at night, when everybody stopped their cars and things, then he could hear the sweet sound of the stream. So similarly, we have to turn down the radio volume of our consciousness. And to do that, we have to live alone. We have to focus on a message that we've heard. If we're hearing so many messages from so many people, and especially if we're not serving them, then how will we imbibe any of that? And that's our purpose. That was Rupa Goswami's purpose, not just to impress everyone that he had so much information and to disseminate information. We're not the International Society for Information Consciousness. We want people to become Krishna conscious. Our purpose is to develop Krishna bhakti. So to do that, we need to learn this art. It's a very subtle art. And it's a very important art, it's a very practical art for every aspiring sadhak to learn to live alone in a crowd. It's necessary. It's necessary for all of us, as faithful Rupanugas, as faithful followers of Srila Prabhupada, to serve this sampradaya, to serve the mission of Srila Prabhupada. That's necessary. And to not stray and go outside here and there whimsically. That's necessary. We should be part of the mission. But simultaneously, we also have to have some individuality. It's not that when I joined the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and I joined the Bhakta program, that I got Kaivalya Mukti and I became one with ISKCON. And now I am ISKCON, and that's all that I am. But we see a very common thing amongst the converts, especially the people who come to this movement. And it's not such an uncommon thing if you study the science of sociology. When religious converts, someone adapts a new religion, sometimes they have a bit of an identity crisis. I was a bhakta leader for some time in Los Angeles. And I remember I shaved the head of many devotees. And along with shaving their hair, I was shaving their identities. I remember one fellow who had long dreadlocks. And that was who he was. And another fellow, my God, we went to his house. He had so many things he was attached to. He was really into black magic before he joined the Hare Krishna movement. And he had all these weird, he had a crossbow and had all these magic things and the strange mirror and all these things he wanted to keep. And he had to give that up. Otherwise, how could he join in the ashram? So he had an identity crisis. One day they have dreadlocks and they're a cool guy. and they got their particular faded jeans or whatever identity, and then the next day they got this sheet, bed sheet wrapped around their waist, and this ill-fitting kind of kurta thing, which they don't even know how to put on right, and they don't know who they are. All of a sudden, they're the bottom of the totem pole. And so it's a very common thing in that situation. It makes common sense that I need a new identity. Everybody needs an identity. Everybody needs an upadhi. This is the crisis in Bhagavad Gita chapter 1. Arjuna was having an identity crisis. Why? Because how can I kill Dronacharya? How can I kill Bhishma? He's my guru. He's my teacher. And those persons contain part of my identity. If I kill them, I'm in effect killing part of myself. Everybody needs some kind of identity. And Srila Prabhupada saw that. He was so kind. It's a good thing for us to contemplate on. This is the 50th anniversary of ISKCON. Achyutananda Prabhu, one of Prabhupada's very first disciples, was there when Srila Prabhupada signed the momentous legal papers for the incorporation of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It was a very big moment for Srila Prabhupada. But he says when Srila Prabhupada signed that, suddenly he turned to the devotees and he said, actually, we don't need this. For ourselves, we could just stay under a tree. But if we do that, who will come? Who will come? Why won't they come? Because they want an identity. I want to become a life member. I'd like to become a brahmachari. Or maybe I'll be a grihastha. Or maybe I'll work in the Sankirtan department. I'll be a Sankirtan devotee. I want to be an ISKCON devotee. It's also an upadhi. It's a good upadhi. Special people get that kind of upadhi. It's not just for anyone. But it's still an upadhi. It's still not an eternal identity. It's not our swarup in the spiritual world. So when people join like that, they need some identity. And sometimes they just merge. They just want to do something. They become a sycophant. And they just want to please everybody. And they become a fanatic. A hardcore person. Yes, I follow all the rules and I only read, you know, I've heard devotees say here in India, you're not allowed to read Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, until you've read all the small books in a particular sequence. And what to speak of Srimad Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitamrita. I don't know what would have happened to me. The first book that made me a devotee was Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And then when I joined the temple, the first book I got, I was cleaning a godown, was a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila Chapter 4. And I loved it. Couldn't understand anything. But I was reading through it. So it's not wrong. But people, when they're neophyte, they adopt that kind of mentality because they want to please people. Now I'm new in this society. How can I be accepted? So I want to be a good person. I want friends. I want to be accepted. So I'll be really fanatic about the society. We have to be very, very careful. I'll say something a little strong. Please forgive me. These temples can be dangerous. I think they can be like the Agasura demon. Wow. The Agasura demon was this huge snake-like personality. The cowherd boys saw him and they said, hey, that looks really cool. Let's go have a good time. Let's go inside. And they went inside the mouth of Agasura without Krishna. And what happened to them? They all died. And you know the story, I think. Krishna brought them back to life. And Krishna killed Agasura. and everybody lived happily ever after. But something else happened after that. They went back there. A year later was the first time. That's an interesting reason why. It's another story from the Bhagavatam. They went back there a year later, and the Agasura demon was all gone now. It was only, all that was left were the bones. And those bones became a playground for the boys along with Krishna. I found that very interesting, and I have a little analogy about this. That same demoniac personality, Agasura, who killed the boys when they went inside without Krishna, they died without Krishna. The same personality, his body, became a playground when the boys were with Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada's movement is a playground for the faithful servants of Srila Prabhupada, for those devotees who are Krishna conscious, who keep Krishna with them. But if we make the mistake of entering inside the demon, institution can be a demon. We enter inside the demon without Krishna, without the proper motivation, then you may die. And we've seen that. I'm sorry, there's been a few casualties. And generally they'd leave after some time. It's very sad. And all they're interested in is some position, some love, puja, pratishtha. They don't understand, they don't see the essential point that Srila Prabhupada came to give. So there's a nice letter, a very famous letter, Srila Prabhupada wrote in 1972 to a devotee. I was going to call him a leading devotee, but actually he was not exactly a leading devotee. Practically, he was the leading devotee in 1972, and that was Karandar Prabhu. He was taking up most of the management for Srila Prabhupada. Very intelligent person. So there's a beautiful letter to Srila Prabhupada wrote to him, very famous letter. I'm going to read a few excerpts from it and make a few comments, if you don't mind. Prabhupada writes, "Regarding your points about taxation, corporate status, etc., I've heard from Jayatirtha that you want to make a big plan for centralization of management, taxes, monies, corporate status, bookkeeping, credit, like that. I do not at all approve of such plan. Do not centralize anything. Each temple must remain independent and self-sufficient. That was my plan from the very beginning. Why are you thinking otherwise?" A little further he goes on. "Do not think in this way of big corporation, big credit, centralization. These are all nonsense proposals. Only thing I wanted was that book printing and distribution should be centralized. Therefore, I appointed you and Bali Mardan to do it. Otherwise, management, everything should be done locally by local men." And then he says something which I like very much. Please hear this. "The Krishna consciousness movement is for training men to be independently thoughtful and competent in all types of departments of knowledge and action, not for making bureaucracy." Let me read that again. "The Krishna consciousness movement is for training men to be independently thoughtful." Can you repeat that? It's really good. "The Krishna consciousness movement is for training men and women to be independently thoughtful." Prabhupada said that. This was his purpose. This was what the Krishna consciousness movement is meant for. Krishna doesn't want you to get Kaivalya Mukti. He wants individuals. It doesn't give him any pleasure. Srila Prabhupada doesn't give any pleasure if your identity is, "I am the institution." Be an individual. Be a strong individual. But be an individual that can learn, that knows how the science of living alone in the crowd. being in the crowd of people and supporting an important mission like Srila Prabhupada's ISKCON. But at the same time, being an independent person, Prabhupada says this is such an important thing. He goes on, once there is bureaucracy, the whole thing will be spoiled. There must be individual striving and work and responsibility. A little later he says, it is very difficult for people to quickly give up so many bad habits as you have in your country. So educate them gradually, first with chanting, and do not be so much anxious to count up so many numbers of new devotees. If such devotees go away later, being too early forced, I want to see a few sincere devotees, not many false pretenders, false devotees or pretenders. He goes on later, our leaders should be careful not to kill the spirit of enthusiastic service, which is individual and spontaneous and voluntary. It's so important. And this is the point Krishna's making here in this 10th verse, in the 6th chapter, Rahasi Stita Ekaki. If you want to be a transcendentalist, you have to be alone. You have to be an individual. Don't just merge with everybody else. Don't just have the same opinion as everybody else. Be yourself. But the problem is, we don't know who we are. We need to learn who myself is. Prabhupada goes on. This is the art of management. To draw out spontaneous, loving spirit of sacrificing some energy for Krishna. To draw out a spontaneous, loving spirit of sacrifice. Prabhupada finishes, he says, Krishna conscious movement must always be a challenge, a great achievement to be gained by voluntary desire to do it. Not by force or just by some management. And that will keep it healthy. So you big managers now, try to train up more and more competent preachers and managers like yourself. Forget this centralizing and bureaucracy. This is the instruction of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada and how he wanted this mission to be run, the purpose of this mission. It wasn't to make an institution. That wasn't his purpose. The institution is a box. Don't become so enamored with the box. What's inside the box? What's the gift in the box? The gift in the box is Krishna Bhakti. If we spend all of our time just wrapping the box and paying attention to the box, and not that there's no importance to the box. The box has to be there. Every valuable thing needs a box. But the box is not the mission. What's inside is the mission. One sadhu once told me that the society, the institution, is just like water that floats your boat. You're living in the temple. Especially if you're a brahmachari. I know what it's like. I was brahmachari leader, ashram leader for a long time in L.A. If you don't go to Mangalartik, I don't know how many days, different temples have different rules. If you don't go to class, if you're not seen chanting, you're around 16 rounds, you can't stay. Just by remaining here in this place, it floats. The water of the institution floats the boat of your bhajan. That's good. It's a very useful thing. But if you're foolish and you take a bucket and you start filling it up with water and pouring the water of the institution in the boat of your boat, into the boat of your bhajan, what will happen? Your bhajan may sink. We have to accomplish both things. Individual bhajan will make us a strong member of Prabhupada's mission. Huh? And there's a couple of analogies I like to use in this regard. I often do on our Prakramas in Puri. That we say that Jagannath Puri is the it's the Jagannath Puri University of Braj Prem. And it's a university that was opened by the Supreme Teacher, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And each different Leela Stali, if we contemplate on it, is a different classroom in that university teaching us a lesson by which we can enter into Braj. First lesson in that university is the Jagannath Mandir itself. And there are a number of lessons about that. One lesson about it is, though, and it's an important lesson because according to Lochan Das Thakur and Chaitanya Mangal, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going 3 times a day to the Jagannath Mandir. Every day he was going. And that Jagannath Mandir represents organized religion. And sometimes we don't agree with organized religion. Sometimes there may be some mistakes in organized religion. Look at the Jagannath Mandir. Jagannath was installed by who? By Lord Brahma. The same Lord Brahma came again in Kali Yuga, and now he's not allowed inside the temple because he was born in a Muslim family. His name's Haridas Thakur. Because they have this kind of rule. Even though he's a great, great devotee, and Rupa and Sanatan Goswami's probation nishet, entrance forbidden, not allowed inside. And we can learn a lesson from that, interestingly, that God himself always supports organized religion. Mahaprabhu supported the Jagannath Mandir. Jagannath himself supports the pandas, even though sometimes they do some little wacky kind of things. God supports organized religion because it's important. Millions of people will benefit by having darshan of Jagannath and going there. So that should be maintained. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us that we have the Jagannath Mandir in our life, the mission of the spiritual master. But not very far away, there's another place which is called the Gambira. And there, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was staying with 2 or 3 devotees, Shukh Damodar, Roy Ramananda, Raghunath Das Goswami, Govinda, his servant. And he was hearing very high things, such a high thing, I'll just put a word on it. He was hearing Vidyapati, Chandidas, their songs about the moods of Radharani. Very, very high thing. Not even about Krishna, but about the moods of Radha. That's what he was hearing there in the Gambira. And that Gambira Leela is a very esoteric, very deep Leela. We don't speak about that today. But it also, we can draw a purport from it. That not far from the Jagannath Mandir in our life, in that organized religion that we're supporting, we need a quiet place, a Gambira, where we can go very deep. And if we think about it, we could compare Gaura Leela to a cake. A cake has 2 aspects. It has the bread part, right? And it has the sweet icing. And similarly, Gaura Leela has 2 aspects. It has this Gambira Leela, very high esoteric aspects of it, which are like the icing, not so big. And he has his public face at prachar, preaching, which is like the Jagannath Mandir and the cake. Now some Vaishnavas are afraid of the icing. No. No one is allowed to take icing. Can only have the bread part. And then there's other Vaishnavas who only like the icing. Why will I eat that bread part? You're not rasik. But if you contemplate on it, both of them have some very important purpose. If you only take the bread part of the cake, it becomes really dry. And you might even choke on it. Or if you only take the icing part, what happens to you then? If you eat 5 kgs of cake icing, you'll spend a lot of time sitting on the bathroom. They'll think you're doing the Hodel treatment or something. Hmm? So, both things are required. But they require it in a certain proportion, in a certain way. If we want to fully get Gaura Kripa, don't think that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's purpose in coming here was to distribute coming back books and higher taste cookbooks to teach about vegetarianism and reincarnation. You've missed the boat. So many Vaishnavas and other sampradayas are vegetarian and who understand about reincarnation, even Hindus who are not Vaishnavas at all. We should understand the deep aspect of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So for that, we need to live alone. Living alone doesn't mean that I'm going to just be by myself. But as we learn from Mahaprabhu's example in the Gambira, he was alone with Swarup Damodar and Roy Ramananda, Raghunath Das Goswami, very intimate devotees who could understand his heart and had some appreciation for some higher thing. If we take that higher thing and we just try to wear it on our sleeve, so to speak, and we try to advertise it, I'm a Raghunuga Bhakti Prabhu, Bhakta. Sorry, I don't read Mahabharata. Mm-hmm. I don't read Bhagavad Gita. I only read Dasami Skanda, 10th Canto, Bhagavatam, the Rasastali section, the section about the Ras Leela. We have to act according to our adhikar. And so for that, we have to be alone. We have to learn this science of living alone in the crowd. And therefore, Krishna says this thing in the Gita 4 times. So I've gone a few minutes over. We'll stop there. Mother Narayani, you'd make me really happy if you have any comments. Even corrections, I can tolerate. Or anybody else afterwards. Is there another mic? Just wait a second, please.
Hare Krishna. About living alone, there's a story from the 24 Gurus, the 11th Canto, about there's a young girl who was alone at home, and some men came who were interested in marriage, and she was husking some rice in the back, and she didn't want them to think she was very poor, so she took all the bangles off and only kept one in each arm. So then it's a very interesting purport that if you live with someone else, there's going to be disagreements. So therefore, you should live alone. But then the acharyas comment that actually this is for the gyanis, because they will all disagree and they will speculate and they will argue with each other. But for the devotees, living alone means living only with devotees.
Beautiful. Oh, thank you very much. Anything else, Sri Prabhuji?
Can you comment a little on Bhakti Lord Thakur? He writes, towards the end of life, one has to go into Devjan Bhajan.
Well, Srila Prabhupada writes a similar thing in some purports. He says that the spiritual master should preach and write many books and things, but then at the end of his life, he should retire to a solitary place and his disciples should take up the preaching. Of course, famously, here in the next room, Srila Prabhupada didn't do that. And he preached right up until the last breath to teach us. But Prabhupada also showed that. And that's a bona fide principle. We just heard a nice story today from Mother Srimati when they had the first festival in Mayapur, one devotee, perhaps Yogeshwar Prabhu, was in charge of making sure that the guest rooms were nice in the long building. But the problem was they weren't finished yet. and devotees were already arriving. So all the early devotees who were coming there, he was engaging them in services to help fix up the rooms quickly. But there was one particular devotee who would come every morning for prasadam, and then he would disappear. And he would come back in the evening again for prasadam, and he wasn't doing any work. And finally, this devotee became, the manager became annoyed, and he went to Srila Prabhupada and he said, "This devotee's really agitating me. He's not doing anything." And Prabhupada said, "What is he doing?" And he said, "Prabhupada, he sneaks off and he goes to the forest nearby and he sits and chants japa all day." And Prabhupada said, "That's also service." And the devotee didn't know what to say. Prabhupada said, "That's also service. That's also an aspect of devotional service. And when we can't do anything else, and the day may come, likely will come, in all of our lives, when we can't run around with a bag of books on our shoulder, or whatever, cooking in the kitchen all day long, or whatever services we were doing, but we can chant. We can do nirjan bhajan. And at that time, we don't want to be around all these materialistic people. And materialistic people, Srila Prabhupada writes in Madhyalila Chaitanya Charitamritam 1 purport, he says that, he speaks about persons that he calls Kali Chelas, or false devotees. And then he says, this is a quote, he says, "There are many Kali Chelas in this Krishna consciousness movement, and we should avoid them." Don't be surprised. We're preaching to common people. People who are butchers and prostitutes and drug addicts, and they join. And some of them even become managers and whatever. And not everybody's perfect within a few weeks or a few days of joining or whatever. So we have to distance ourselves from such persons. And at some point, we might even need to do some kind of nirjan bhajan. But even Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he writes that. He exemplified that in Jagannath Puri, across the street, in the Bhakti Kutir, across the street from Haridas Thakur's Samadhi. He went to Puri, he writes in his autobiography, he had a dilemma. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a consummate preacher, but he was feeling discouraged transcendentally at the end of his life. "People are not listening to me. They're not taking up what I'm saying. And so what's the value? Better I just go then and do my own bhajan." And he was doing his bhajan, and one day he had a vision. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, came to him and told him, "Do your bhajan in front of Haridas Thakur's Samadhi, and whatever bhajan you do there will be heard all over the world." We see Ayendra Prabhu. He was a preacher for a long time in ISKCON in New York, but he was just doing 24-hour kirtan. And some people criticized him. But just look and see the impact he had on this society and how many people have been affected and inspired by his example of bhajan. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself had his disciple Krishnadas with him when he was doing his nambhajan at the end, and he left his body later in Kolkata. I've seen the bed where he left on with his family members there. So it's an important principle. It's not that nirjan bhajan is wrong, but as Mataji said, we don't have the consideration of the gyanis. The gyanis understand this to live alone in one way. The bhaktas have a completely different understanding of it. We live alone in the crowd. Okay? Anything else is there? Prabhu?
Prabhu, you were emphasizing on identity.
On?
Identity.
Huh.
So we have our identity, shave head, tilak.
Yes.
But we see sometimes now people, they want to put their old identity. They want to change. Just like they put turban and other things that they want to. Sometimes they say that we are sick or we have some problem, that's why we are doing this one. But seeing one person, other person does, then this change is going on. So identity is losing.
Yes, it's a good point. I kind of inherit, I think, perhaps in your comment, is the observation that we need to have some discipline in the mission. And part of that discipline, if you see, if you go to any private school where there's discipline, they have uniforms. And they have a certain, the girls have a certain skirt they can wear and a certain top. And if they don't wear that, they don't let them come to school. Prabhupada also gave us uniforms. Whether you like it or not, or whether someone says Kurtas or Vedic or not, that's immaterial. This is a uniform that Srila Prabhupada gave. And especially if we're going to live in the ashram. And I find also personally, I'm a person, I appreciate art very much, an artistic sense. And I also appreciate individualism. And I don't mind if someone has long hair and they're a Vaishnav or something. Jagannath Das Babaji, he was like that, and other personalities. We don't mind that. Sometimes he was that way. But I dress a certain way. Very, very simply, very, very orthodox, because I have a service to do. My Guru Maharaj gave me a service to preach within the society, and to try to serve Prabhupada's mission. And so it facilitates my service to do in a certain way. I don't need to try to disturb things by being flamboyant and trying to attract attention to myself by dressing in a particular way or something. That doesn't mean you're an individual. The strongest individual is someone who dresses, he may dress like everybody else, but that personality, he's an individual by the strength of his character, by the strength of his behavior. But that's what we really value. It's a big thing, and it's a sensitive thing. Vaishnavas Bhaktivinoda writes in Chaitanya Sikshamrita that wearing the external symbols of a Vaishnava, Kunti Mala, Tilak, like that, are important for development of bhakti. Even Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his book Raghvartma Chandrika, which speaks about how to develop Raghunuga Bhakti, he says that these Tilak and Kunti Mala, these things are important. He says, but if we think that someone is only a Vaishnav if they have the Tilak or the Kunti Mala, and we judge them in that way, then he says that's a kind of prejudice, a kind of sectarianism. And that's detrimental to bhakti. We need to be very broad-minded. But devotees also have to be patient and cooperative and understand, especially if you want to be a brahmachari, if you want to live in the temple, there's oftentimes a dress code. One devotee came to me once at a big festival in Europe, and he was my friend. He said, Madhavananda, you should complain. They won't let me lead kirtan. And he was a big kirtan leader. I said, why not? He said, because I'm wearing pants and shirt. I didn't bother trying to tell him my personal opinion about that matter. I just said, Prabhuji, what can I do? They have their rules. And when in Rome, do like the Romans, is a saying. You have to follow the particular rules of the place that you're at. Whether we like it or don't like it, that's the rule. There's some person in charge. If you don't like that, go do something different. But Srila Prabhupada liked this. So I can comment like that. Again, it's a sensitive subject and an easy thing. Anything, Prabhuji?
Observation I made, I was hoping you can make some comments on it. In the same way you were describing about how an institution can make a person lose their individuality.
The institution won't make them. The institution doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
but our attitude toward
attitude, yeah. Do you think that in the same way, like you can draw parallels with a person or people who follow like a trend of popularity, because I've observed that people in the movement or elsewhere, they see a person who's popular and they try and follow that. That's something I've observed. Do you feel that also impedes a person's ability to be an individual?
I personally, I don't worry so much about it. I mean, I've seen devotees imitate my Guru Maharaj. I've seen devotees, sometimes they try to imitate Srila Prabhupada, the way he drinks water, or the way he says certain things, or the way he walks. Or sometimes maybe someone may imitate the way Ayendar Prabhu was dressing. But it's very difficult to say how much that's inspired by inspiration. Oh, I liked the simplicity that he had in that. Or how much it's just imitation. I want to look like him and be known that I'm like him, and therefore I'm going to do this thing. So individuality is a very important thing. Every form of art stresses that. Every artistic culture, every advanced culture emphasizes that. Modern culture certainly emphasizes it a lot, especially in America. We have the lonesome cowboy, the fierce individual, give me my gun or give me death, they're like that. Individuality is an important thing, but who really understands how to develop individuality? If I just go and buy a strange hat, I remember I wanted to be an individual, and so when I got out of high school, I went and bought a fancy hat with a big feather on it and all these things. And I wore it for a little while, and after a little bit, I felt really ridiculous. Why am I doing this? That doesn't make me into an individual. It just makes me into someone who's trying to attract attention in a certain way. And so I got rid of that hat. Actually, our movement is all about becoming an individual. Being Krishna conscious means being an individual. And as we've seen with devotees, as devotees progress from Shraddha to Nishtha, to Ruchi, to Sakti, as they gradually progress in the path of bhakti, they become more and more individual. They understand more and more who they are. They become stronger as individuals. They have some identity. It may take some time, and we should always respect, because I don't know, I may think you just... But you took your identity out of a box, and it's a cheap thing, some kind of imitation of someone else. But no, there may be some very deep reason why you dress the way you do, why you have certain tattoos, why you shave in a certain way, why you do this or that. What business is it of mine? We always have to remember to act according to our position. And if we do that, then our life is very peaceful. But when I try to act beyond my position and try to be everyone else's judge, I try to appoint myself, I'm a self-appointed servant of Yamaraj. And I go around with my little notebook and pen noting down everybody's mistakes that they make and chastising them. I'm a self-appointed leader. No, nobody appointed me a leader. Thank God. I'm not a leader. I'm not a manager. It's so nice. I can just speak some Krishna Katha sometimes. We write a little bit in that. And life is good. Life is happy. I don't want to be a manager. But if I have that service, if I'm a parent, if you have some responsibility, you're a temple commander, your guru has given you some important service like that, you have to do that. And we do in a certain way. Okay? It's a very nice question. Thank you. It's really late. Anuradha, thank you. Okay, so we'll stop there, I think. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhakta Vindaki, Gopremanande Hari Hari Bo, Vancha Kobadarubish Cha, Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha, Patitanam Bhavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha.